Listen now to the Gospel of Jesus Christ according to Luke. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them on ahead of him in pairs to every town and place where he himself intended to go. He said to them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. Go on your way. I am sending you out like lambs into the midst of wolves. Carry no purse, no bag, no sandals, and greet no one on the road. Whatever house you enter, first say peace to this house. And if a person of peace is there, your peace will rest on that person, but if not, it will return to you. Remain in the same house, eating and drinking whatever they provide, for the laborer deserves to be paid. Do not move about from house to house. Whenever you enter a town and its people welcome you, eat what is set before you. Cure the sick who are there and say to them, 'The kingdom of God has come near to you.' But whenever you enter a town and they do not welcome you, go out into its streets and say, 'Even the dust of your town that clings to our feet, we wipe off in protest against you. Yet know this, the kingdom of God has come near.' Whoever listens to you listens to me, and whoever rejects you rejects me, and whoever rejects me rejects the one who sent me." The 72 returned with joy, saying, "Lord, in your name even the demons submit to us." He said to them, "I watched Satan fall from heaven like a flash of lightning. Indeed, I have given you authority to tread on snakes and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing will hurt you. Nevertheless, do not rejoice at this, that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven." This is the good news. Our daughter Hope has a sensitive stomach, which has provided some interesting moments for our family over the years, the most memorable of which was an international incident. We were touring the Palacio Real, the royal palace in Madrid, when it happened. Right there, between the security checkpoint and the entrance, Hope lost her breakfast all over King Juan Carlos's floor. Maybe eating half a cheesecake at 7 a.m. wasn't the best idea she ever had. Now, on any other day, in any other place, this would have been only mildly mortifying. But this was an away game for us. We were strangers in a strange land, and that definitely made it more stressful. Adding to the degree of difficulty was the fact that the king was in residence that day. I mean, it's bad enough to vomit on a monarch's floor. It's even worse to do it when he's home. What this meant in practical terms was that the place was crawling with extra staff, palace guards, the royal protection detail, the national police. So as we stood there staring in disbelief at each other and at the mess on the floor, the entire security apparatus of Spain came at us from all directions. Suffice it to say, I was never more glad that Val speaks Spanish. As she talked with all of these heavily armed people, my head kept turning between them. I was like watching a tennis match as I tried in vain to follow along. While I could barely understand a word of what they were saying, it was clear to me that they were engaged, well, in some sort of negotiation. The officials would say something and Val would shake her head back and forth saying no. Even I understood that. This went on for a little while, but eventually Val gave in as she moved up her head up and down and finally said "Sí," which I also understood. Some of the soldiers scurried away and returned a few minutes later with a plate of saltines and a glass of water for Hope. They watched her intently as she availed herself of their hospitality, probably hoping that she wouldn't go off again. I asked Val to explain what had just transpired. She told me that since the king was in the palace, the royal physician was there too. The police offered to go and get him so he could tend to Hope. Val politely declined. Next, they offered to fetch a wheelchair from the royal infirmary and a police officer to push it so that Hope could take the palace tour in comfort. Val declined once again. Finally, they offered to get something to soothe Hope's stomach from His Royal Highness's kitchen, and this time Val agreed. She figured, we weren't actually getting out of there until she accepted something from them. And water and crackers seemed reasonable for them to offer and for us to take. Hope managed to keep it all down, thanks be to God, and we thanked the staff for their kindness. We walked around the palace for an hour or so before going on our merry way, though security was never far behind. And a further escalation of diplomatic tensions was thus avoided. Learned some things that day. Among them, travel with kids can be tough, and high school Spanish really would have benefited me. But the single greatest lesson I came away with from this whole experience was this: hospitality can sometimes be difficult to accept. Jesus understands this too. Today's story, unique to Luke's gospel, he sends 70 messengers, two by two, into the world to preach the good news because even Jesus couldn't be everywhere at once. As Jesus moves closer to Jerusalem and the cross, the scope of his mission gets wider, even as his time here on earth grows shorter. For a while, Jesus had been the only one preaching and teaching, but in the previous chapter of Luke, Jesus sends out the 12 apostles to do this. Now, he decides to send 70, and this number, like so many others in the Bible, has meaning. Jesus' message is really starting to make an impact, so he needs more apostles to help share it. This is pretty simple. But there's more to it than that. Jesus knew the Hebrew scriptures inside and out and refers to them constantly. The reference here is to Genesis 10, which provides a comprehensive list of the nations of the world at that time, which, you guessed it, totaled 70. What we're supposed to know is that the gospel, God's grace, is available to everybody everywhere. And it's no accident that we're dealing with this text in the middle of Pentecost, the season that focuses on the origin and expansion of the early church. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few, Jesus tells the 70 as he sends them out to share the gospel. And it's no wonder the laborers are few, because what he's asking them to do is kind of difficult. Jesus acknowledges that the disciples are heading into an inhospitable world. I'm sending you out like lambs into the midst of wolves, he says to them. That sounds nice, doesn't it? Well, I got to admire Jesus' honesty. Once again, his recruiting pitch ain't exactly the best I've ever heard. As if this weren't tough enough, Jesus also tells his messengers to travel light, and I mean very light, on their mission trip. Carry no purse, no bag, no sandals, he commands. While this might make it easier for them to get around, it also makes them completely reliant on the hospitality of strangers, and this is a difficult position for them to be in. When they enter a house and say, as Jesus tells them to say, peace be with you, peace be to this house, the only two possible outcomes for them are rejection or acceptance. If Jesus' messengers are turned away in one place, they're to wipe the dust of that town from their feet and move along to the next. God will take care of the rest. In the verses that our lectionary reading skips over, Jesus talks about the woes that will befall any place that rejects his messengers. I tell you, it will be more tolerable for Sodom than for that town, he declares, and this is pretty severe. Like I said, Jesus really knows his Hebrew scriptures, so go have a look at Genesis 19 if you're curious about how things worked out for Sodom. But what if the messengers are accepted where they go? Well, this might actually be more difficult for them. If they're rejected, they can simply walk away. But if a household shares in the peace that the disciples extend, Jesus tells them not once but twice to remain in the same house, eating and drinking whatever they provide. Do not move about from house to house. Whenever you enter a town and its people welcome you, eat what is set before you. In Jewish culture, what you ate and with whom you ate it were really important things. And so this is a provocative command on Jesus' part. These disciples were ordered to go out into the world with only the gospel to give and told to accept whatever they were given without worrying about what it was or who gave it to them. They were entirely reliant upon the hospitality of others for survival. They were completely vulnerable. And vulnerable is an uncomfortable thing to be, but that's exactly what Jesus wants them to be. That's exactly what Jesus wants us to be. Hospitality is kind of a funny thing. It's relatively easy to extend, but not always easy to accept. Being confronted with true hospitality forces us to come to terms with just how dependent we really are. It calls us into real relationship with other people. Just to be clear, by hospitality, I don't mean something like inviting a friend over for dinner, because that situation assumes a kind of pre-existing relationship among equals. It's a nice thing to do, but it doesn't involve a whole lot of risk on anyone's part. Unless my mother's cooking. Sorry, Mom. But what about hospitality in a context like church? Be honest. Generally, we have people over here to this house, to our house. But Jesus doesn't tell his disciples to invite people over to hear the good news. He calls them to go out into the world and share it with people where they are. And he orders his disciples to take nothing with them on their journey, because he wants them to understand not only what it means to love their neighbor, but also what it means to allow themselves to be loved by their neighbor, whomever or wherever that neighbor might be. As people called to do the work of Christ's church in this day and age, we need to meet others in their vulnerability and at the same time accept and embrace our own vulnerability. Because while we definitely have much to offer, there's also much out there for us to receive if we're actually willing to receive it. You see, what ultimately unites all God's people is our dependence on one another and our complete and utter dependence on God. We need each other, and that's what real discipleship is all about.